Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello, I'm Gemma, and welcome to another episode of Good Influence. This is the podcast where each week you and I meet a guest who will help us pay attention to something we should know about, as well as answer some of your questions. This week, we're talking about expectations, how social media might exacerbate long-standing societal norms, how letting go of one pressure can empower you in other areas, and what to do when it's tension we put on ourselves that's holding us back. Just a note to say that we do mention some body image and eating issues in this episode, so take care if that might be difficult for you. So, joining me this week are Alex Light and Em Clarkson. There's so much I could say about this pair individually. Alex just published her first book, You Are Not a Before Picture, which whizzed straight into the Sunday Times bestseller charts. And Em is a ball of online empowerment, from spreading celebration of women, not competition, with her Feel Good Fridays, or taking the intimidation out of sports with the Have a Goes. Together, they host their new podcast, Should I Delete That?, aiming to explore the nuance that's often left out of social media conversations and have a laugh along the way.
The irony is that we are taught that we have to be likeable, that it's so important for women to be likeable, and yet it's so much harder for us to be likeable than it is for men.
So let's get right into it. So we're going to talk about expectations today. So I guess a good place to start is, I feel like you both separately and together on your platforms talk a lot about different forms of expectations and the ways that we kind of conform to those or try not to conform to them. Could you maybe both tell us a bit about how you came to be so sort of outspoken in those spaces? Like, where did this bucking of expectations come from? Em, do you want to start?
So I think, like, it's important to know a bit of information about me, and that's that I grew up as a chronic people pleaser. Like, my obsession with making the people around me happy was just so massive, and it's something that a lot of people struggle with, I know. And I don't think I realized, I don't think I'd even heard the term people pleasing until like 2 years ago. And once I started to learn, and I actually started getting coaching to help me, because I just was giving all of my power to other people all the time because I cared so much about the opinions of others. I started to learn what I had been doing, the patterns that I'd been sitting in, and I realized that really this society creates an environment that gets women, that puts women in this position where we do have to prioritize how other people feel. We do have to make sure that everybody around us is happy and that we are palatable and we're likable. And like, so I think I simultaneously kind of had this huge moment of like self-discovery where I was like, oh my God, this is my whole identity, is like trying to make people like me. But then also realizing actually this was fully engineered by a society that wants to sell me things and wants to keep me small and wants to keep me chasing this sort of unobtainable way of life. And I've realized that the two things, it's been very empowering for me to share my journey with kind of unlearning people pleasing and kind of being okay with people not liking you necessarily or not agreeing with everything that you do. And I think like that is so jarring in the society that we live in. Women's worth is so tied up to likability, and that's a lot linked into like how we look and everything. But we have to be liked in every area. We have to be liked in order to be a good person. And actually, men don't, and it's so annoying. Like, men can be ballers and just businessmen, and like, just, you know, they can just be like, oh, he's a savage. He gets great deals. Like, he's a Rottweiler. Whereas women are bitches and they're bossy. I was like, this is so unfair. So the two things have basically been like my own self-discovery, realizing how it exists in this like parallel way to the way that we exist as women in this world. And that sucks. So it's been great for me to just kind of like use myself to talk about it online and kind of really explore this stuff. That wasn't that articulate, but I think
it was great. I mean, yeah, just kind of using yourself as a case study for why this is not good for us, I guess.
No.
Alex, how about you?
What she said. No, just kidding. Like Em, I also grew up a people pleaser, but unlike Em, I am still in the depths of that. And it's what is great is that I have like recognized it now and I understand it and I understand that I've always lived this way, but I do still really struggle with that and struggle with wanting everyone to like me and wanting to do what's best for everyone else and like just feeling this great weight of expectation on my shoulders. But I am, yeah, so I feel like more so than Em, I'm kind of trying to do it publicly, I guess, like go through it publicly,
yeah,
and share as I'm doing it. But my gateway into this whole thing about this whole discussion around expectations and expectations on women was through diet culture, mm-hmm, and learning about what diet culture is, which is essentially these massive expectations that women especially have to burden, like it's kind of there for men, but mostly women. And just being so horrified and frustrated by the fact that these expectations exist, that they're so pervasive and the ubiquity of them was just so horrifying to me that I really started to lean into this diet culture space and trying to break down the concept of these expectations, like why are we supposed to be thin, like why are we told that we have to shrink ourselves, like why are we told that if we're not thin we're not attractive or worthy or whatever it is. So that was how I came to start talking about stuff. And then I think it's hard to like tap into one area of things that are linked to the patriarchy without it sort of opening up a massive can of worms and realizing that it is more, even more pervasive than you know, it's so pervasive, like way more than you realize. And I think that's what we've been doing that with our podcast as well. This isn't just a shameless plug, but now it sounds like it. But this is
that's
what
fine.
Me and
We're
Em
gonna talk about it.
This is what I can't say me and Em without thinking of the bloody clothing brand now, but Em and I, that's grammatically incorrect anyway. Em and I have been tackling that stuff with the podcast, and it's interesting to find how deep it runs, just how deep-seated all this stuff is and how entrenched in these expectations that we are, especially, like Em said, as women.
Where do you think right now most, or maybe not most, but where are these expectations coming from, do you think, these days? Because I feel like when you talk about expectations on women, and it's very easy to go immediately to social media, basically. But also a lot of what we're then talking about is kind of the deep-rooted stuff that has like predated social media by quite a long way. How do you think those things are kind of fusing themselves together right now?
I don't think it's necessarily just... I think that, you know, social media in my mind isn't creating a vast amount of new problems. It's just exacerbating existing ones. And I think when it comes to expectations, you don't need to look that far. You can look at how society talks about mothers, you know, like you're a bad mother if you go back to work, but you're a bad person if you don't, you know, you can look at what a woman was wearing. Should she have been assaulted? And her behavior there is called into question and judged. And I think societally, although social media does exacerbate these things, I think societally the expectation on women to be perfect in every area, and there isn't an area, I don't think I can think of an area where this isn't a pressure. We have to look a certain way, behave a certain way, be perceived a certain way, make other people comfortable. And I think it's nowhere is it more obvious than the way we talk about mothers as a society, because that is an area it's a bee's nest. It's huge. It's not even a bee's nest. Bees are lovely. It's a wasp's nest. It's terrifying. People are, you know, they're so judgmental. And I think like that's just a really good example of something that women are doing exclusively and all the time trying their best, that they're judged so massively for. So I think the societal expectation sort of seeps into everywhere. And of course, social media, you know, yes, your appearance particularly is called into things, and you do have to be palatable, and you do have to not be too shouty or not be too ranty or whatever it is. But it's exactly the same as what people are experiencing in the workplace or at school or whatever. It's sort of just, yeah, same stuff on a screen, basically.
Mm. Yeah. And I think like traditional media as well has massively perpetuated these expectations. And I was just thinking as you were talking there, like the irony is that we are taught that we have to be likable, that it's so important for women to be likable. And yet it's so much harder for us to be likable than it is for men. Men can get away with the bare minimum and people are like, aren't they a great, what a great lad, you know?
What a great dad.
You know, or, you know, he cracked a joke. God, isn't he funny? You know, whereas women really have to, like, we have to go the extra mile to be likable in so, so many ways. And that's like the horrible irony of it, is that we're like taught that we have to achieve something that it takes all of our energy to achieve. But then again, that's a nice tool of the patriarchy, because then it keeps us quieter and more obedient and more, you know, easily influenced. So it makes sense. But yeah, it's hard. There's a lot.
Definitely. I mean, you mentioned, touched upon diet culture earlier, which is something that you both discuss a lot. Do you think that targeting one of these areas, so for example, going against diet culture and trying to get out of that grip of sort of expectation on yourself, do you think by doing that in one area, it's made you feel more empowered in other areas, such as the likability? Is it kind of, once you break away from one thing, is it easier to feel less like there are other pressures and expectations on you?
So I think humans in general, right, are very, they kind of go along with what they're told and what they know, and they don't question or challenge much. And I actually think it's we're not necessarily born great critical thinkers, and we don't engage critical thinking that well. And like, I never did. I never questioned anything at all. But it was when I started to question diet culture and was kind of forced to engage critical thinking that I was like, oh my God, this applies to so many other areas of my life too. Mm. And still now I'm like, how is it that someone can say, oh, you're overweight or you need to lose weight? And that doesn't bother me, genuinely. And I mean that genuinely doesn't bother me. But then someone can say, oh, you're a bad writer or you're a bad person, whatever. And it can cut so deep, you know? And really, the premise is kind of the same. So I think it's open. It hasn't necessarily solved loads of different like areas of my life, but it's definitely opened me up to, yeah, being more critical of what is expected of me in other areas.
For me, on that, my endeavors as a teenager and a young adult to look good, and by look good, I mean be thin, because that's what society taught us looking good meant, were, it was so huge, and it was always because I wanted to be considered attractive and I didn't want to fail this like test as a woman. I wanted to be what society wanted from me, and I wanted to achieve that so that I would be attractive and I would be liked more. And it is literally as simple as that I didn't want to be thin because I wanted to be healthy. I didn't want to be thin because I wanted to be able to run really far or do anything cool with it. I just wanted to be thin because I wanted boys to fancy me, because that's what I'd been taught as a priority. And as I started to unlearn that, and genuinely my favorite thing, and that the only way I was able to do that was just like, it's the best word in a woman's arsenal is why. Why do I want to be thin? Oh, because I wanted to look attractive to it. Why do I want to look attractive to it? Look at most of the men that I was chasing as a teenager. I'm like, they wash their socks like once a week. They're absolutely foul. Like, they only cared about their football. A boy dumped me over email, and I'm not going to eat lunch because I want to impress him. Is that a joke? Like, and when you push why, it's like, why? Because they want you smaller, because they want you busy. They want you dieting. They don't want you Monday to Friday. If you're busy thinking about not eating and being pretty and being thin, then you're not going to chat up in the work. You're not going to demand more pay. You're not going to do any of that because you're busy, you're hungry, you're tired. You've got stuff to think about. You've got to choose what to wear. You've got to do all these silly little things. And just, you know, it's, and then you push back. Why do they want that? Well, they want to sell you things. So they want to make money from it. And why do they want to make money from it? Because they can. And then they're going to get richer. And the more you ask why, the more you're like, oh my God, this is insane. I'm ruining my own life so that this lad can get rich, basically. Like, how annoying. And so once I did it there, and I just realized that I didn't, my body didn't need to be liked. It didn't need to be approved of. That's a ridiculous thing to expect everybody to like it. And even then, why do I want everybody to like it? It's actually odd, you know, it's weird. So once I made that piece with my body, I was like, you know what, sod it. I'm bringing the brain in like this, you know, that was kind of fun and kind of like a great revolution. I'm going to do it for the whole family. And just kind of applied the same why all the time. And my logic now is like, well, if men don't have to, I'm not doing it. And, you know, men don't need to start an email saying sorry, so why should I?
Love that.
Yeah, it's such a good point. And I think I relate to what you were saying before, Alex, as well, about the kind of now, if people will say something to me negatively about my appearance on occasion, it's not nice, but it bothers me less, because to me, I can quite easily rationalize that and sort of think, well, if you're saying something mean to me about the shape of my face, which has like nothing, like there's nothing I could have done about that, that really says more about you than it does about me. Whereas if people, yeah, want to kind of critique you in other areas, and I mean, this is a conversation we were having. So I recorded for Alex and Em's podcast yesterday, and we were talking about being cool and how that's still kind of the thing, even when you let go of a lot of this other stuff. Yeah, it's that thing, the thing that carries on. And do you think when you get rid of a lot and we're trying to go against the kind of patriarchal standards, do you think that what's left then that we're then struggling with is trying to get women to like us, and now we're not that bothered about men liking us anymore?
Oh God, that's such an interesting thought.
That is such a good question.
Because women are conditioned to judge each other. Right. Like, I think when I said earlier about mothers being a hornet's nest, like that, oh, I've got, I'm getting it like worse, bees to wasps to hornets, it's getting worse. I think that's actually an example of like a women-only space, which should be incredibly supportive, but can be very judgmental. And I think that's because women are pit against each other. Look at Meghan Markle and Kate Middleton. Look at this, the way that Little Mix has spoken about. Look at, I don't know, Taylor Swift versus, you know, it's always somebody who wore it better. Yeah. For as long as we've been alive, the media has always pitted women against each other. Camilla or Diana, it's always women versus women. And it's, I think with that in mind, like that's what's difficult, because kind of learning not to care what men think is one thing, because they're men. That sounds really bad, but because, you know, you learn that you can't just live your life searching for male approval if you want to live a fulfilled life, fulfilled life. But I think with women, it's such a group activity that we all have to partake in, and that's unlearning the inherent bitchiness and competitiveness that stems from the fact that we have been conditioned to compare ourselves and to put other women down. Like all the magazines we've been exposed to for so long encourage you to judge other women. And I think that's such a hurtful, I think that's why it can be so hurtful when somebody criticizes something about you, you know, when another woman criticizes you, because on the one hand, you feel like you want solidarity and girl power and unity, and we're going to fix each other's crowns. But on the other hand, we exist in a world that has pit us against each other forever. Mm. And inherently, we just want to judge and pick somebody because it makes us feel better about ourselves. So if I say something mean to you for a short little minute there, I might feel better about myself, even though long run I won't. But that's, Heat magazine doesn't talk about that.
It's a projection of our own pain when we do that. It's a projection of our own pain because we are held to those standards, right? And do you know what, actually, just before talking about women being pitted against each other, just before we came on here, I saw a meme, and it was, you know, Modern Family. So it was Julie Bowen who I don't know her name in the thing.
She plays Claire.
Who plays Claire. Okay. So the blonde mum, and then Sofia Vergara, who plays Gloria, who's like the Spanish mum. And like they dress Gloria in like amazing, like tight dresses and like really fancy dresses. And she's always wearing heels and she's always super glam. And like, there's always like that, you know, throughout the show, there's like a running joke that like, oh, Claire so jealous of Gloria, and it was this meme was Julie looking at Sophia, and it said underneath the face of jealousy, and I was like, and like there we go, right? If that's and that's stuff that we're consuming all the time, that's being thrown in our face, so it's just totally understandable then that we still have these biases against women, even though we're fighting against these standards.
This is something that men say to me quite a lot. It's like, well, it's women that judge other women. If I ever talk about, you know, some of the things that blight women, and a lot of the time you'll find like the not all men brigade who want to wash their hands with any responsibility and blame. And they very often say like, oh, well, you know, it's women that bring other women down. It's women that judge other women. It's women that say a lot of the bitchy things. You know, women do tend to bitch more than men, but actually, and they're right. But the reason we do it is because of the patriarchy. Right. It is because we've been conditioned to do that. So not totally blameless, lads, but
that always annoys me when people say that, because I'm like, yeah, but why? Think about why. We weren't just born being like, hate other women, must bring other women down. Like, there's something behind it. So like, let's think about why.
Yeah.
And at the root of that is the patriarchy.
Yeah, because we want to be more attractive to men. It's the pick me girl thing. God, I could literally do this for days. It's so annoying. Honestly, it's like you pick a stitch and you're like, oh God, the whole dress is falling apart.
The whole world is unraveling. Society is not what it was. I'm going to buck my own plan for the podcast episode, because we're basically now answering one of the questions I was going to ask you later. So I'm just going to read it now anyway, and then, yeah, we'll come back to other questions. So it was Althea who'd sent a question in for this episode. And said, my question's about trolling online, specifically the hate that women get. What are your thoughts on the saying women support women, but a lot of hate and criticism women get are coming from their fellow women? So that's kind of what we've just been talking about. She said, I just noticed, based on what I've seen online, there is a certain group of women who have female empowerment, etc., in their bios, but are the first ones to leave a negative comment on another woman's post. I just want to know your thoughts on this confusing and kind of toxic idea. So that, I guess, is kind of, there's a lot of unlearning that needs to be done. But this, I guess, is kind of when we're already in that headspace of, you know, women supporting women, how does it so often then become nasty again? In the kind of like, if we don't agree with, or if we feel that other women aren't as progressive as we are, maybe I'm saying that in air quotes for the sake of the tape. But do you know what I mean? Like, how do we then manage to kind of go so far towards being kind to other women that we then just go back to shaming people for not being, I don't know. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Al, I don't know about you. Sorry, I'm just going to jump in. I used to be like the biggest dick, I can't tell you, even in my like the entry to my feminism, even at the time when I really thought I was kind of like women support women, and I was really stridently feminist, and which I actually think I've always been, although I realize anyway I've been on a journey. But I think you know, I don't think I've always been the kindest, and I think I've never done it online. I've never said it out loud particularly, but I've had toxic thoughts, and that's because I'm quite a judgmental person, I realize, and it's because of my own expectations, right? Like, I always think my expectations of other people were way too high, and I was setting my friends up and people I didn't know up for failure, basically, because I held everybody to my standards, and I think, and I hope I'm quite a good friend, and I think things should be done a certain way, and I have this view of what I think and hope the world would look like. So I'd held everybody up to the expectations that I held to myself, because I'm like, well, that's fair. This is how I want to be. And everybody else needs to be here too, if that's how we're going to make change and stuff. And it's really easy to feel quite righteous within that space. And you can be like, okay, this is what I think. And I really think I'm right. And I really think my intentions are good. And you know, I wasn't doing this from a place of like strident, like dictatoring how to, you know, be a feminist. I just had this sort of view of what I thought was right. And it's very easy then to judge other people when they fall short of your expectations of them. And that's something that's quite difficult, because we hold ourselves, you know, well, whether we like it or not, we put various people on pedestals, and we have expectations of other women, of other people. And if they fall short of this expectation, then we do judge them. Instinctively, we judge them because, you know, like we're all talking about, it's sort of innate that you would. And I think that's a really interesting thing, because you're setting people up to fail. They're taking a test that they don't know they're taking. You know, like I would do this to my friends all the time. I'd set this quiet expectation up in my head, like that they'll do this. Then if they don't do it, I'm like, well, they're a shit friend. And then I'm like, hang on, that's not fair, because they didn't know that I wanted them to do this. And they've just, and now I'm saying they're a shit friend because they were just doing whatever. And I think women quite often do that to other women with the best intentions. And it's really easy then to sort of feel this like righteous anger, when actually you have to lead with empathy, particularly when you consider how many people you're exposed to online. You're seeing different people at random points of different days, and you can't possibly expect every single person to please you all the time in the same way that you wouldn't expect to please somebody else at any given time. And we have to lead with more empathy and just think, you know, these people have different tools, different lives, different worlds, and I can't expect them to whatever. But I think that's how it happened. That's certainly how it happened for me when I found myself thinking negatively about other women. It was because of the expectations I'd put on them that were nothing to do with them. That was all me.
Yeah. It's interesting what you say, given even what we've just said earlier about, you know, I don't expect people to do things that I will like all the time. And it's like you said, so why would I expect everyone to like me all the time? But I feel like that's the sticking point that I find, you know, it's like, you just don't want to upset anyone ever, which I think is, you know, a noble goal, if you like. But as you say, it doesn't make logical sense. I don't expect other people to walk around doing and expect them to behave in exactly the way that I would like them to all the time. But I still expect that of myself when everyone else is judging me, if you know what I mean.
Right, yeah, same. It's not conducive to like a happy life either, is it? Because you're spending so, it's draining and exhausting because you're spending so much time and energy on trying to make on this like fairly futile goal. But just on that point, and I think this is, I think kind of touching on this as well is like the whole like women support other women without exception thing. And I think that can kind of lead a little bit into toxic positivity a little bit, because you know, we still need to hold ourselves and other women accountable, and we can't, you know, calling out damage or toxicity should still be allowed. And that is not, it doesn't mean that you're not supporting other women. I guess it's like for the overall cause of supporting women, even if you have to call out one woman. Am I making any sense? Do you know what I mean? I feel like we do still have to hold other women accountable. I say this as someone who finds it very difficult to be held accountable because I'm sensitive as hell. So when someone tells me that like I've done something wrong or I need to learn more, I find it incredibly painful. But I think it's really important, and I think we should be able to do it without being then labelled with, oh, well, you obviously don't like women, you're not supporting other women. Because, and like Em said, everyone's at different points of their journey, and not through fault of their own, just through coming to learn about all this stuff at different points, and also looking at everything through their own lens, which has been crafted by, you know, a lifetime of different experiences. So, but I do think, like Em said, empathy and compassion is absolutely key to this like entire conversation. And that is sad when someone is sort of preaching female empowerment and then proactively trying to tear another woman down. That is sad. But again, it might be a projection of their own pain, and they feel like they're being held to these standards. So why shouldn't other women, or they're being, you know, called out or whatever. So why shouldn't they call out other women?
Yeah. I mean, that was going to be my next question, kind of how do we then balance taking kind of like valid constructive criticism that is necessary? How do we balance that with trying to block out or kind of ignore people's unfair expectations on us?
Someone told me once that you should never take criticism from somebody that you wouldn't go to for advice. And I think that's like pretty crucial in the kind of like making peace with criticism, right? Like I've always been told that I'm overly sensitive and I'm terrible at taking criticism, and you know, it's constructive and whatever. Personally, I don't, it's interesting what Al's saying there, because there is definitely a line between holding people to account, but also sometimes I think the something that's been really valuable for me to learn is like, okay, not my circus, not my monkeys, which is an old proverb. And it's basically just like, sometimes you have to let other people live, because sometimes, you know, like Al was just saying there, like, we all have different worldviews, we all have different filters, we all perceive things very differently. So personally, you know, some people message me, message me on the regular telling me that, you know, I'm just giving you some constructive criticism. I'm like, no thanks. And before, I'd have taken every single bit of constructive criticism, and I say that in air quotes, because I think that's just a way that very often people say that, just to validate. It's the same people who say that they're being devil's advocate. It's like, we don't need, the devil doesn't need an advocate, he's the devil. So I think very often people will sort of label things constructive criticism when really they just want to be a bit of a dick. So I think there is a really interesting balance to learn within yourself about what you should be taking on board, because if you want to, you can find criticism in anything, and you can look for little meanings in everything that you hear, and you can take some feedback as criticism, you know, and not everybody's going to label what they're giving you, you know. So on Instagram, you'll probably get like, okay, this is constructive criticism, but in the work environment, you won't get that. Your boss will tell you something, and it's completely up to you how you perceive that, because he might be saying that, like, you did a great job, but it was a little bit late, and you could be like, oh my god, he's gonna fire me, I'm the worst, and whatever. And it's like, actually, you completely missed the first bit where he was saying it was a good thing. So I think you have to be able to know that when somebody doesn't like one part of you or criticizes one part of you, it's not a complete character assassination of your entire being. You're not a terrible human,
or that isn't
being.
The way it should be anyway.
No, but it totally, when you're, you know, like, up to your eyes in people pleasing, which was my whole life, when somebody said one, you know, it would literally be like, oh, your hair looks fun today, I'd be like, oh my god, I'm gonna shave it, this is how could they, I'm so ugly. And like, you know, you take things, so very often things that are said critically aren't necessarily a criticism, and even if they are, it's okay to be criticized, and you don't have to agree with what the person says to you. That's the other thing. When you're a people pleaser, you're a very malleable person. So when somebody says to you, oh, you're a bit shouty, you know that your instinct is just to be like, okay, yeah, they're probably right, I should probably be quiet forever. And actually, that's their opinion of you, and just because somebody has an opinion of you, that doesn't make you who you are. And I think that's really interesting as well, when we take criticism, to really work out who's giving it to us, and do we believe it too? Because sometimes, yeah, we do need to be held to account, and sometimes someone's going to give us some constructive criticism that we do need to hear, like, oh, you shouldn't be talking like this because we're excluding somebody from the conversation, or you're not using inclusive language. And great, call that out, and well, call it in my opinion. Often, you know, you can take that to somebody quietly, and say, you know, this is what I think, and this is, you know, just helpful, whatever. And if I agree with that, then that's great. And if I don't agree with that, that's okay too. It might make me a bit of a dick, maybe, if they've said a good thing and I've chosen to disagree with them, but that's on me. And you do get to make that decision. When somebody brings you advice or criticism, you can choose if you want to take it, if you agree with it, if you would go to this person to ask some advice on this issue. And that's empowering for me.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good point about, yeah, you don't have to automatically accept things, but also it is kind of good practice either way to sort of sit with it for a second and think, okay, who is saying this? Why are they saying it? What are their points? Could I actually take that on board and, you know, slightly change my behavior to help someone else, for example? Do I feel like that's something that I actually want to do? And then, you know, and then you do, and it's great. And sometimes, no, it won't be. Alex, you look like you've got, I'm going to jump in face.
No, I didn't. I was just actually thinking that I totally agree with you. It's good to explore it. And I was actually just thinking, like, I wish that was my first reaction, but I'm working on it, rather than go to like, I'm over, I'm done, I can't do any of this, like, I'm out, I'm tapping out of life, everyone can fuck off and leave me alone. But yeah, I think that's a really valuable point. And I guess, like, it's hard because this stuff is so nuanced. And like what you were saying, Em, about like constructive criticism, I guess when I was talking about it, I was thinking about bigger stuff, about, you know, if you're doing something that's harming a group of people or you know, causing active harm. But yeah, the constructive criticism thing, I kind of can't bear. Like, people will come to me and say, oh, just so you know, I thought your last post was terrible. And I'm like, okay.
Cool, thanks.
And then they're like, just a bit of constructive criticism. And I'm like, well, it's not really. And also, I didn't ask for that. And also, please leave me alone. So, this stuff is all like very, very nuanced. But I think that's the important part to recognise as well, is that it is nuanced. So it requires us to like think about it and engage and be more deliberate with it. And not react on our first instinct, which is what you were saying, like explore it and sit with it and decide what you want to do with it and where you want to take it.
Yeah, definitely. I think last thing that I'm going to tack into this portion is on your podcast, so literally in the description, you're talking about, you know, exploring nuance in conversations, which I think is great. That's, you know, what we're kind of doing today, I hope. But also say that you're trying to like sort of dispel some shame from people. How did you kind of identify that as something that is so necessary? And do you think it is that kind of shame that comes from what other people expect from us, or is that something that we're putting on ourselves? Or like how are you kind of getting rid of some of that shame by having these conversations?
Do you know, I feel like I shared a meme yesterday that was like, I felt guilty since I came out of the womb or something like that, which really, really made me laugh. But I was like, I actually feel like...
I saw this actually.
Yeah, it's good, isn't it? Which is also true. But I feel like that about shame as well. I feel like I felt ashamed of myself from day dot and about everything. Particularly my body. Because that's obviously like a huge part of my like journey, I guess. But I have felt so much shame, and I've spent my life beating myself up for things that I perceive to be bad about me, and just feeling, you know, feeling this incredible shame around stuff. And it's only, do you know what? It was actually, I was really lucky to be able to access therapy for my eating disorder. And it was only when I started to speak to someone who was neutral and who I could really like let all my secrets out, because it was confidential and just someone that I didn't really know, that I realized so much of what we think and believe is shared by other people, and so much of this stuff is so shrouded in shame because we feel like, God, I'm the only person that feels this way. I'm so bad. I'm feeling like this, or I'm so embarrassed that I feel this way. And actually, so much of it is shared by other people, but we just don't know because we just don't talk about it. And so, and talking about my eating disorder, for me, something that was like the thing that was so more shameful to me than anything, was one of the most powerful things that I've ever done, is talking about it and opening up that conversation, not just for me, but for so many other people who are like, oh my God, I thought it was just me. I thought, you know, I was so ashamed of myself because I thought, God, this is just like a vanity thing. Like I want to look good because I want to be thin, which is obviously so not true. But there is so much power in opening up about these things that we've felt shame about. And like Brené Brown, who I'm obsessed with, like shame can't exist in the light. And it's so true. When you bring things into the light, shame can't exist. I mean, I can probably think of a few things that like, a few circumstances where shame could exist in the light.
The exceptions that prove the rule.
Yeah, sorry to be pedantic. But as a general premise, like shame can't exist in the light. And so it's so cool to talk about these things. And especially for women, like there are so many things that women specifically have felt so much shame about. Even like, you know, Em and I talk about like shaving your vulva, right? And it's like, no, people have never talked about this. And yet we've had this standard where we're supposed to be like hairless little seals. And yet we're not taught. No one talks about how to shave or like what you should use or like what you should do. It's all just like, hush, hush. You can't have any hair down there, but we're not going to let you know how, you know. So I think, and that is just like one example of so, so, so many. So I think for us, it was really, we were like, we want to bring these topics into the light and just make women feel less alone, because I can guarantee that like the vast majority of things that you feel shame about is probably, you know, people listening, like it's probably a fairly common thing, and it's not just you, like you're not alone. And yeah, I think that's kind of where it came from.
I also think like something else that Al and I've realized, like, you know, we both work on Instagram. And it's a really like interesting time with activism, particularly because there's a lot of cries of like, do better, do better, do the learning, you know, whatever. And that's really, really important. Mm-hmm. But we hold each other to this very high standard of kind of, we need to, you know, we need to know the right language, we need to know the right resources, we need to be sharing, we need to be doing this, and being the best, showing up in the best way that we can, and being, you know, properly good people online. And that's great. And I know that a lot of young people feel the pressure to do that with certain things, whether it be, like, I know something, Gemma, you talk about a lot, like with the environment or whatever, but mm-hmm. So you've kind of got this like really weird time where we all want to do the best that we can, but we don't really know how to. And yeah. There is a shame in saying that. Mm-hmm. Like, for me personally, learning is one of my favorite things to do. I don't know is literally my favorite sentence in the whole world. Mm-hmm. Because I think we are expected to have the answers, particularly when you have a platform and you're expected to have done the work and whatever all the time, and it's really hard to know everything. And you know, actually, I think sometimes just being like, I actually don't know, is incredibly powerful, because, you know, you've got two ears and one mouth. And so saying I don't know is really powerful, because you can sit and you can learn, and that's really valuable. Mm-hmm. And I think we wanted to give space for learning with the podcast as well, because it's okay not to know everything. It's okay not to know why diet culture has you in this vice-like grip. You know, a lot of people, for example, would follow like Al maybe, or me, and or the podcast, and be like, God, I feel really guilty because I'm dieting. And I don't know why, because I love what you're saying, but I can't quite get there myself. And it's like, that's good to know that you don't know, because it's within that space that you grow and you learn and you form mm-hmm. new opinions. And I mean, Al always teases me because I love a cliche and I want to start a fridge magnet business one day. But if you can't change your mind, you won't, well, if you won't change your mind, you won't change the world. And I think like that's what we wanted to do with the podcast. Thank you. It'll be a great magnet. I'll send you one.
Great, thank you.
You're so welcome. I think, with that, it's like we have to give space to help people learn and not do it in a judgmental way. We're all just on that journey, and we can't be ashamed of the stuff we don't know, because you do what you do with the tools that you have. And, you know, if you didn't have the right tools, that's not your fault. It's just time to pick up better ones. So, yeah, like a toolbox.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Every week, my guest and I will be answering your questions, and the first one comes in from Maria, who says, I'm 39 years old and live in Athens. I have quite a few questions about expectations, but let's stick to the getting married / having children issue. Why do people think that this is the only way to happiness and a woman's only purpose in life? This idea is quite prevalent in my country. Even on birthdays, it's the most common wish people give you, along with the, quote, you're not getting any younger reminder. What if I don't want kids now or ever? People also tend to think, since I'm good with kids, then I should have my own. And then key question at the end, why is it so hard to accept that each one of us has a different perception of what happiness is?
So I'm going to answer this, but actually using something that Em said the other day, because we talk about this a lot, actually, and we talked about it on the podcast. And it's like we like humans find it very difficult to relate to one another in terms of like, if we feel something strongly, we find it difficult to believe that the other person doesn't feel it at all. Mm. So people that have a really strong biological urge to have children cannot fathom that other people
don't
have that and don't want that. Hence the whole, like, are you sure narrative, or the whole, like, you'll change your mind, or just you wait, you know, until you hit 30 or 35 and then you'll want kids. And I just think, I think it's a lack of understanding. And also, this is something that we have been taught. That's what we do. That's what women do. We, like, make ourselves pretty so that we get a man, and then we get married and we reproduce. Like, that's what we have been taught that we're supposed
literally
to do.
Literally the most, so it's solid, totally heteronormative prison of our lives.
Exactly. So when we go against the grain, that feels uncomfortable for people, probably for a multitude of different reasons, but it feels uncomfortable and people don't understand it. And so I get why there's a lot of questioning around it, and to people who don't want children. I understand that. But as with everything else we've talked about, like, it's their issue, not yours. But it's frustrating and annoying if you've made that choice, you don't want children, and that's your choice. To have it constantly questioned and picked at is really frustrating. But yeah, like we said, going back to everything, like, it's totally about them and not about you. And just, yeah, straight, you know what you want, which is great, and you've chosen a path which works for you, which is fantastic, and stay strong to that.
What she said.
Yeah, love that, great answer. I mean, yeah, I just think, I mean, even as someone who isn't, you know, particularly going against what society might expect of me, I mean, I'm 31 years old, I've been in my relationship for 7 years. I get asked when I'm getting married, I mean, at least once a week, and that's in person. Like, it's just, it's one of those things that's just always swirling around. And I think it's one of those things that expectation, it's kind of like sexism as an issue to me, where people think when we talk about sexism, we're only trying to fix it for women, but actually it harms men and other and marginalized genders as well. It just harms everyone. And this kind of idea, I think, whether or not you're planning on taking that kind of quote unquote traditional route in your life or you're not, the constant kind of questioning about it is just bad for you, whatever you're doing. How we can't let go of it is, yeah.
And how people think that, like, the audacity of people to think that you won't really have made the right decision until they say to you, are you sure?
Exactly.
And then suddenly you've said, are you sure? And actually now I've changed my mind. Like, it's crazy. But yeah, the pressure is intense. I mean, I'm nearly 34 and I got married last year, but it's constant, like, this pressure to have children. And you really, like, I feel it so much to the point where I feel like I drink decaf tea, and I just do for my anxiety, and I feel like I have to say I'm having decaf tea, but not because I'm pregnant.
Yeah, because people are just always ready to be like, oh.
Always. The barista in the coffee shop that I go to every morning, I had a decaf coffee, then he went, oh, is that because? And I was like, how fucking dare you? Sorry, I swore again. But how dare you? How dare you? And I don't know why it annoyed me so much, but I just think it's the more we learn about other people, the more we learn about people's issues and people's lives. And it's so irritating that we consistently, and I only can say this because I know I've been one of these people that's thought that my way is the best way, that people still have to inflict their break, like, their thoughts on your life, on you. And I'm like, do you want to raise the child? Do you want to shove it out of your vagina? Because then we'll chat. You know what I mean? Until that day, until you're going to carry it around and, like, sort of turn into, like, a cow, then we'll chat. But until then,
yeah,
you can go.
I honestly think we just need to ban asking women if they're pregnant or not forever.
Unless you're going to ask men at the same speed, like, which they just wouldn't. If Alex asked for a decaf coffee, they'd be like, oh, is that because you're looking after your sperm? No, no, they wouldn't ask him that. They'd just give him a decaf coffee because that's what he asked for.
For the benefit of anyone who doesn't know, this is I'm talking about her husband, not about the Alex we're talking to right
not
now.
Not me.
Just if anyone didn't understand that part.
That elicits a lot of confusion. We have girl Al and boy Al now.
It's all good. Okay, let's move on, because otherwise we could do another whole episode on literally that one question. Okay, so this is kind of an amalgamated question because a couple of people had asked similar things, and it's kind of on the theme of how do we deal with our own expectations of our lives when our plans, or, you know, what maybe we thought might happen is interrupted. So, for example, there was a question that came in from Ifra, who said that she felt like she was off track of what she and everyone else kind of expected of her, because she spent a block of years studying for exams and feels like other things have kind of fallen by the wayside. And there was also a question from Tamara, who said she felt like she'd missed out on a chunk of her early 20s while she was in eating disorder recovery, and now kind of struggles to look at her own expectations of herself and her own life and kind of feel like she's off track. I'm going to have to kind of then roll that up into an actual question because I've just talked at you. But how do we kind of, aside from other people's expectations of us, how do we try and let go of our own expectations of us when those things get waylaid?
Do you know what? I was answering from my experience with actually two things there. But when I was, I mean, I very much had expectations for what my life was going to look like. I was going to get married and then have children. And I was with my ex-boyfriend from when we were 18 until I was almost 30, and we broke up just before I was 30, and it felt like my world had completely turned upside down, and all these expectations for what my life was going to look like had been literally flipped on their head. And it actually, I feel initially I really tried to fight it and be like, no, I've got to do something quick. Like, I've got to get my life back on track. And actually, it was only when and it was my mom that really helped me with this. She was just like, and I do have to say, for anyone listening, like, that was so young, but it just didn't feel it at the time. Like, for what I was expecting and the path that my friends were on, it felt very suddenly like I was really, like, my life was completely different to everyone else around me. And as someone who very much likes to follow the crowd, that was terrifying. And my mum was like, hang on, take a deep breath. Like, you're absolutely fine. And like, this is your reality now. And that's okay. And let's see what happens from there. And that was the best thing. That was the best thing that anyone like said to me. Because I was like, oh, hang on, I'm absolutely fine. I'm totally fine. And once you lean into that, and like, and I think like Em was saying before, like, one of the best things we can ask ourselves is why. And then like the second best thing we can ask ourselves is like, why not? You know, like, why not this path now? Like, okay, so now I'm single. I can't be single now at 30. And then like, but why not? Why not? Like, what's wrong with that? Like, it's okay. And if you can lean into that and explore that and like fight that a little bit, I think just your expectations are, you can never, like, life is so unplanned. And I think the more plans and expectations you have, the more you're just going to be disappointed, because because life is unlikely to live up to those. So I think, I think it's really powerful when you can let go of that and be like, okay, I'm going to go wherever this takes me.
I also think, like, you get a choice. And I, again, because I always had very high expectations for myself and for everybody around me, it's very easy then to feel resentment when things go the wrong way. And it often leads to unhappiness. It's a very direct route to unhappiness, really, that resentment, because you resent loads of things. I actually said it in the podcast recording that we did yesterday together, that I get very angry with myself, and I'm much more likely to get angry with myself than I am with anybody else, because I do hold myself to this really high standard. Yeah. And if things aren't going the way that I want them to, which they literally never do, then I get irrationally angry. You know, I get really, really, really angry, and I hate the feelings inside me. I hate how I am making myself feel. And something that I've learned through coaching is that you do get a choice. If someone said it, it's a really powerful thing. It's like, you know, when you moan about the traffic, you have to realize that if you're stuck in traffic, you are the traffic. And it's like, whoa.
Oh my God.
Whoa. Wait, say that again.
If you're stuck in the traffic, then you are the traffic, right?
Oh, yeah.
So it's
yeah.
really easy just to be so ego-led and to feel like a victim and feel like all this bad stuff's happening to you and feel annoyed and feel resentment. Everything I felt stemmed in this resentment that I wasn't pretty like other people. And in my own head, I really struggled with my appearance for a long time, and I didn't think I was pretty like everybody else, and I didn't think I was organized like anybody else. And as I've got older, I found all these other things to be, you know, berate myself for. And actually, it's only as I'm getting older that I'm like, oh my God, I don't have to feel like this. I don't have to feel like this. I don't have to resent myself. I can just accept sometimes that this is the way it is. And I haven't got to be angry about it. I haven't got to shout at the car in front of me that I'm stuck in a traffic jam. Because when I do that, I'm not angry with him because he's going to work. I'm angry with me that I got in the car that I didn't leave. As always, I didn't leave earlier. Mm-hmm. But I get so angry and I project it straight onto him. And I'm just using traffic as an analogy, but I'll do it all the time. I used to hate other women because I thought I would put them against myself, thought they were prettier than me, so I wouldn't like them because they were prettier than me. And it works kind of the same thing, right? But I think I always project my own anger onto other people or onto other things because I'm angry with myself for whatever it is, because I've held myself to an expectation and I've fallen short. And all I feel is anger, and I hate feeling anger. Like it's such a at odds emotion with exactly who I want to be and with who I am as a person. I am optimistic and I love the outdoors and I just love life. Mm. So when I feel all of this anger, it's a vicious circle because it makes me even angrier with everything else. And then that makes me even angrier with myself that I'm ruining my own life and my own day by just being a dick when I don't need to be. And so just choosing, it's like, I'm actually just going to put this down right now. Like, we are where we are and I am who I am. And that's just going to have to be okay today because there's loads of other cool shit in the world, and look how stunning this is, and like, let's go smell a rose and look at a butterfly. And I know that sounds bonkers, but it's like, it is an active choice that I make now when things annoy me. And it's like something comes into my head and it's like, I'm gonna show an age here, but it's like you press the eject button on the cassette. You say, I'm gonna flip it. I'm not having this. I'm listening to side B because A is just not what I need for my insides right now. Yeah. And that's been really fun for me to like choose different thoughts which elicit different feelings. That's cool. That's badass.
If you want to know about opportunities to send in questions for upcoming guests, then follow us on Instagram or Twitter at goodinfluencegs, or you can email the podcast at goodinfluencepod@gmail.com. Before you go, I've got three things I ask every guest, and that's if listeners want to find out more about what we've been talking about today. Could you please recommend us something to read, something to listen to, and something to watch?
To read, I would say anything by Caitlin Moran, particularly her early books. They completely changed my life and made me realise, well, that my life was a lie and that things could get better.
Right.
To listen to, there's a song by an artist called Orla Gartland, and it's called You're Not Special, Babe. And I listen to it every single time I need reminding that I'm not the only person in the world and that everybody feels like I feel and I'm not alone.
That sounds brilliant.
It's so good. And then to watch, I would go onto Instagram and follow the life coach Jacqueline Hurst, and I would watch every single video she ever makes because it will blow the top of your head off every single day and make you
in a good
an
way.
Infinitely happier person.
Excellent recommendations, thank you.
Love that. Okay, so for me to watch, I am a bit of a Brené Brown fan. I just love her. And she did a talk called Why Your Critics Aren't the Ones Who Count. And it's a twist on what you were saying, Em, about don't take criticism from someone you wouldn't take advice from. And she says basically that the only opinions that should matter to you are from the people in the arena with you and not the people looking on from the side and not getting their hands dirty. And I really love that book, Why Has Nobody Told Me This Before, by Julie Smith, which is recently I think it's a fairly recent one, but it's absolutely brilliant.
Previous
it's
guest like, on the podcast, Dr. Julie, we love her.
Love that. And she, it's amazing at helping to understand our minds better. But it has a really good chapter on a lot, you know, tying up a lot of what we've been talking about on self-doubt and dealing with criticism that really gets to the root of why it affects us so much and how we can manage it. And it acknowledges, which I think is important, that we, you know, we can't just say to ourselves like, don't care, it's fine, don't care, because we do care. But it teaches us tools for how to manage it. And so I would say to listen, I'm going to echo Em here, to listen to anything that Jacqueline Hurst, who is a life coach. She, Jacqueline actually came on our podcast twice. We got her in twice because we love her so much. And she basically, we had two live therapy sessions with her. And what she says is just magic. And I wish I could bottle up her mindset because it's amazing. And it'll really teach you to give less F-U-C-K-S's. Sorry, I didn't want to swear because we've already sworn too much. and I also love, for anyone who's interested in all of this stuff, because all of this stuff as well is rooted in psychology. And anyone who loves psychology will love the podcast Hidden Brain. And it also helps you understand your brain so much more. And it's fascinating. So that's me done.
Thank you for listening, and thanks again, Alex and Em, for joining me. If you enjoyed the episode, I'd love you to subscribe to the podcast on whichever platform you're using, and if you've got an extra minute, you can leave a rating and a review as well. You can also head over next week to the Should I Delete That podcast, where the guest and host roles are reversed and I'm interviewed by Alex and Em. See you over there, or see you next week.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.